There's always two sides to every game. Welcome to the Game of Two Halves podcast with Tom Tozer and Chris McManus.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Game of Two Halves podcast, a brand new podcast featuring everything football. I'm Tom Tozer.
And I'm Chris McManus. And on today's show, we're going to be talking everything coronavirus. We've got an interview with Clive Tilsley. We're going to give our top five teams. So we're going to make a five-a-side team from all-time Premier League players and this season's Premier League players. And we've also got an interview with Paul Konchesky.
Guys, so we're going to be running this podcast every week. So we're looking just to take it as far as we go, really. So we hope that you enjoy it. Please subscribe on YouTube, share the Spotify podcast, and hopefully we can go only upwards from here. So I think we will get started with our first segment on today's podcast. So coronavirus, we know it's affected all walks of life. But for football fans, it's brought it into lockdown. My first question to you would be, Chris, is how's it affected you with regards to your football, and how are you coping with no football?
Yeah, well, I play every Saturday, or most Saturdays anyway, for just a sort of low league team. And to be honest, I was always thinking that this might be my last season just because of what the career path that I'm going into. I'll be working weekends. So for me, it's actually quite a big shame, the fact that I'm not going to be able to see the season out. And also the fact that they mentioned the other day there might be no football till January next year. At all, so that's quite a big hit. And as with the interviews that we've done already, as they both said, it's going to really affect the big clubs in terms of the money that they have. And when that grassroots football comes around, I think there'll be a lot more teams focusing on academies and bringing players through rather than going out and spending the big money. Obviously, you'll have the teams like Man City, and well, with Newcastle having this takeover as well, they'll probably be a big spender in the future. But they're going to have to look at sort of tightening budgets and looking at the academy players, bringing them through.
Yeah, I want to pick up on a point you mentioned at the start. You were talking about grassroots football. Obviously, you play yourself mainly every Saturday, and I think what a lot of people saw, or what some people don't see, is right, the Premier League may come back, and we know that the Bundesliga is going to be coming back on the 16th of May, I think it is. We'll come to that shortly. But I think this affects grassroots level so much because of the money that would have gone into grassroots level to sustain pitches and sustain teams, really, and leagues. And now that's all been cancelled, and people are not even able to play football. So as much as we probably miss football on TV, there's a lot of it being played at the weekends as well. I think we need to recognise that that's a big part of football's lifestyle. I mentioned briefly that the Bundesliga, the Chancellor in Germany, has just recently approved plans for the Bundesliga to come back on the 16th of May. So at least we're going to be able to see something in the aspects of football. I'm not sure what the regulations around that are, whether it's no fans, etc., or anything like that. Are you happy that it's German football is coming back, and why do you think that the Germans are the ones that are coming back first?
Well, to be honest, I'm surprised that it's the German ones, because it's such a big country, and the distance that the players would have to travel to play each other, I think it's a big risk that they are taking. And if they get a second spike of this virus, then it could back everything up. So to be honest, for me, I think they should just void the league. I think the Premiership should do it and start fresh next season, as I've said plenty of times, because if you give it the league to Liverpool, then do we have a 22-team season? What's happening in the future? Or even I suggested before, wait, just leave it until it's all calmed down, finish the season, and then have a winter break. And because come 2022, when the World Cup's on, we're going to have to stop in the winter anyway. So why don't they start preparing for that now? Have the Euros next winter, or in 2021, and then the year after that, have the World Cup.
Yeah, I think a big thing that you mentioned there, with regards to the Premier League being on lockdown and there's no football, what do we do about Liverpool? That is the one of the biggest debates of the football calendar at the moment. Do we declare the season null and void and don't give Liverpool the title? Do we declare the season null and void and give Liverpool the title? Or do we restart with multiple suggestions of different ways that we can restart? I, on a personal note, feel that whatever way this goes, Liverpool deserve the title. Hmm. 10 games left to go, and yes, okay, there's mathematically they could still lose it, but I think that you know, and we all know the way that they've been so imperial this season, that they've got one hand on that trophy and they do deserve it, and they will go on to win it. So I think, like I said, whatever way this goes, they need to be given the title.
Yeah, I agree that they do deserve it, but at the same time, they haven't won it. And with that, I think that will affect everything. So with Champions League, what do you do with that? Because that's close. The position for fourth with Europa League. If you just void the season, then whoever qualified for Champions League last season, going to the Champions League, and whoever qualified for...
I'm happy with that as a Tottenham fan. That's fine for me. Not a problem.
Yeah.
So, but that every fan's going to have their different opinion. If you've done it that way that you suggested, then Leicester fans will be in uproar, because Leicester have had a fantastic season and they're sitting in the top four. You look at Chelsea are having a good run sitting in the top four. Man United could think they could get into the top four by the end of the season. Look, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the outcome will be. All we can hope for is that the authorities make a decision to bring it back safely and bring it back in the right way.
And the thing is, the main thing is that they do it safely, but if you think about, if they put all the Premier League footballers into hotels and play it at allocated grounds, then that will affect the footballers' morale, because they won't be seeing their family. That will affect how they play. So there's all these factors that you don't think about with their personal life. Like, you think, as we were talking to Paul Konchesky the other day, he said about spending time with his little boy. That's probably the same for every footballer at the moment. They're probably spending so much time with their families. And then if the Premier League decide to put them in a hotel and to play at allocated games, then they won't be able to see their family.
Yeah, I totally agree that you're right. I think lockdown has brought families a lot closer together, especially footballers with their families. They've been able to do a lot more than they wanted to do, as has everybody. I think that the suggestion with St George's Park or different stadiums and hotels, that was one of the ideas discussed at a Premier League project restart meeting. We've had no official word of what's going to happen. I mean, ideally, the Prime Minister's statement on Sunday will give us an indication of how we are to begin easing lockdown. We will just have to wait and see. I think life as it is now, I miss football, of course I do, but I think the safety of everybody is of more paramount at this moment in time. And as we've said, it is just about making sure that it comes back safely and in the right way.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the main thing, that it's safe. It's not even, I think the money side of things, people need to just forget that and make sure that
money's not everything. The people that are worried about the transfers and the money in football, like, it's not important. Like, yeah, okay, clubs in League One, League Two, there is a possibility that some of those clubs could go out of business. And then, at the same time, the Premier League has still got a lot of money. Why haven't the Premier League gone, all right, okay, which clubs are struggling? Okay, let's give these clubs some money. Because, all right, while the Premier League clubs are not bringing in match day revenues, they've still got sponsorships, players' wages. I'm not going to go into the player wage debate because it would just something that would be drag on because there's a lot to take in and there's a lot to go around to sort it out before it fully does come back and football does get back to normal again.
Yeah.
So that brings us on to our second part of today's show. We wanted to do this podcast for such a long time. We started talking about this last year. Due to lockdown, it thought it was the right time to bring it forward. Our first guest today is one of my all-time favourite commentators. I've had the pleasure to listen to him at World Cups, European Championships, Champions League nights on ITV. Absolutely fantastic. Chris, I'm sure you've got memories of our first guest as well. So without further ado, guys, we will introduce you to Mr. Clive Tildesley.
By Didier Drogba. Yes! And it's the greatest night in Chelsea's history. Champions of Europe at last. Champions League winners the hard way. They'd beaten Bayern in their own backyard and at their own game on penalties. Beckham into Sheringham and Solskjaer. Again, and nobody will ever win a European Cup final more dramatically than this.
Clive, thank you very much for taking time out to join us today.
Football is a game of two halves, or it is at the moment. There is a suggestion that in lockdown, when we return, that it may be a game of 240 minutes, or maybe, who knows, 3:30s, or a 30, then a 20, then a 40. Then another game at the same venue. Who knows whether it might not be a game of two halves soon.
We will wait and see. We will wait and see. Clive, like we said, thank you very much for taking the time out to join us. First off, we wanted to start asking, how are you coping under the current situation with lockdown?
I'm very, very fortunate to be in a situation where I'm at home with my wife, my best friends. So, you know, I'm happy and self-contained, and we can isolate. We do have a bit of foliage, as you can see behind us. Not a huge garden, but enough to get some exercise. And we have four guys in their 20s who all live in London. And touch wood, they're all okay. So I'm keeping busy. One or two things that I've wanted to catch up with for a while. Staying active, obviously missing the work, but I hope that that this extraordinary period is, which is going to change everything. I hope that it gives us all a bit more perspective, that we all come out a little better at the other side. I'm afraid that already the first signs of a return of football have brought out the first signs of self-interest in football and teams saying, no, we don't want any relegation. And we've got to get over this, guys. If we haven't come through this period thinking that there are bigger things afoot than the outcome of football matches, then it hasn't taught us anything at all. I would like to think that there is a better perspective about everything, but as I say, the first signs from the first Premier League meetings suggest that might not be the case. But it's a shame if it is.
Yeah, I think we just have to kind of wait and see what the outcomes are. I think as long as it's safe to come back and safe for all parties involved, I think that's the best way that we can come back into football. I kind of wanted to move on to ask, from the shortened season that we've had so far, kind of What's impressed you about this season? If a team has impressed you or a particular individual?
Well, there's only going to be one answer to this: has a team impressed me? Unless you're a Barrow fan, they're doing pretty well. Liverpool Football Club has played a big part in my life. My second job in broadcasting was on Merseyside, and I lived there for a while, I guess the best part of 15 years, something like that, working in local radio and then working in regional television. But even though I'm actually a Manc or from Bury, Greater Manchester, I've got a lot of friends who are Scousers, and I know the area very well. You know, I lived as a Merseysider, as I say, for quite a formative period of my life. So I know the connection between particularly the two city football clubs. I don't want to leave Tranmere Rovers out of this conversation, but particularly the two city football clubs and the city and the community. You know, even the importance of having Scouser like Trent Alexander-Arnold in a Liverpool team still means probably more on Merseyside, perhaps Glasgow, than it does probably in any other footballing city in the world, maybe Barcelona, I guess. But, you know, the late, great Bill Shankly somehow captured the moment in the early 60s when Liverpool was the centre of the world because of the Beatles. And he created this... this culture around football and the football club, which exists to this day. And so, you know, for the club to have the European Cup as an emblem is massive in the history of that football club. So, you know, to go six times last spring, but then to go on from there without making major signings, and to do it in the manner in which they have, it's not just the points tally and the results. It's not even just the style of play and the energy and the intensity in their game. And I know there'll be a lot of Manchester United fans and Everton fans and goodness knows Manchester City fans now, that rivalry has already grown, who are going to disagree. But they just seem like good guys. It just seems like a dressing room full of good guys. There doesn't seem to be anybody that you know, some of their social media stuff in the last few weeks, these yoga sessions and even those really naff Nivea commercials that they did. There's just something about them. There's a communion there, which I think, you know, Shankly and Dalglish and Paisley and all of the, you know, the historic figures who helped build this kind of personality of the football club. I think that the guys that have come in from far and wide, from, you know, from Africa and Asia, just to be a part of this football entity have really bought into it. And Klopp is just the perfect match. He is Shankly reborn in many ways. And I as much as I'm a neutral, you know, it doesn't really matter to me, but it's just been a good news story. And the way that they've done it, say not just on the field, but off the field, I think everything about Liverpool Football Club has been impressive this season.
Fantastic. I think I totally agree with you. I think that pretty much a lot of clubs can learn from the cohesion that's at Liverpool Football Club. Another question we kind of wanted to ask you is, over your illustrious commentary career, you've been the soundtrack to many people's summers at World Cups and at European Championships. What's kind of been your highlight? What the best game you maybe you've ever commentated on, or the best one of the better highlights that you've got from your career?
Well, I'm not really one for rating, you know, greatest games, greatest goals, greatest goalkeepers, worst gaffes. I think football belongs in its moment. I mean, the last few weeks, a lot of people have got very nostalgic about football, and they even got nostalgic about Ajax v Spurs and Liverpool versus Barcelona, which only happened, you know, sort of, they are in living memory. I'm not quite sure they where are we are in the season anymore, fan. But yeah, exactly. So, you know, nostalgia's great, and nostalgia's all about moments. It's about singles, it's about albums, it's about movies, it's about places. You know, first look across the crowded room when you you know, you saw the love of your life for the first, it's all of that. And if that sounds a little bit romantic, football's romantic like that. And, you know, you're a Tottenham fan. Your feelings at half time in the game in Amsterdam were actually probably beyond disappointment. You probably lapsed into resignation and ho-hum. It's been a good run. Never, ever forget the Manchester City quarter final. We've missed Harry and all that. All those things you were thinking, you know, flipping Liverpool have got there, we haven't, whatever. So, in no sense, there was absolutely no clue as to what was coming. Nothing at all. I mean, and let's not forget, I'm talking now about one game which meant a lot to you, that for all them to start, and you'll have seen it as you look back, Ziyech hit the post in the 80th minute. He's had another incredible chance in stoppage time. Toby's missed a great chance in stoppage time. So, I mean, that is football. And it's lovely when you have the opportunity to commentate on a Champions League final that, you know, I've done them, that Chelsea have won, that Liverpool have won, that Manchester United have won. And that therefore, something I might have said during the course of that night has become part of the deposit in the memory bank that the fans have. And that's great. But actually, if there is anything to be proud of as a commentator, it is that you found those words at that moment and that they still stand up to investigation today. I mean, if you think back to Martin Tyler's commentary of the Aguero goal against Queen's Park Rangers, everybody remembers him shouting Aguero and holding the O. That's not the great bit. The great bit is, I swear you'll never see anything like this again. Because that is a big, big editorial call to make at that moment. You know, that can make you can sound pretty stupid if somebody takes a step back after it and says, oh, wait a minute, that was better. Actually, we will never see anything like that again. I mean, Michael Thomas, obviously for Arsenal, I'm sorry, was a similar kind of moment, but in a slightly different culture, a different generation, pre-Premier League. That's the big call. And so as a commentator, you can only, with the benefit of hindsight, have the luxury of looking back and saying, do you know, I probably got that right. Or maybe even quietly to yourself in a vain moment, do you know what, I nailed that. And I wouldn't change a word of it 15, 20 years on. They're good moments. But they're only good moments because people remember them as part of their recollection of that occasion and that joy in their lives. And I actually, I didn't see the Ajax Spurs game live, weirdly. I was away on a boy's golfing trip. You'll have recollections of that night, stuff that you know, Darren and, was it Steve McManaman said, you know, that it will be part of your memory of that night. So, you know, that's where, it's not for me to decide what the best one is, for people like you to decide what the best things we've done and the worst things. And the best, what you decide is the best, will be somebody else's idea of the very worst thing I've ever done.
Fantastic. Clive, we know, obviously, you've had a fantastic career. What we want to know is, how did you get into commentary? How did you get into the profession?
I just wanted to. It was in a different era. It was a long time ago. I often visit universities and get asked just to talk with undergraduates of you know, the various media courses that are available now. And some of them are very specific to sports journalism and sports broadcasting, and they have wonderful facilities. And, you know, by the time they graduate, they're pretty much oven ready to go. As broadcasters, the era in which I was at university was very different, I think there were only about three or four media courses in the entire further education system in the UK, and I couldn't get on any of them. So I finished up doing an industrial economics and politics degree at the University of Nottingham, and did a bit of a deal with my dad, who was in business, and I just wanted to pursue this dream to be a broadcaster. And it's a dream that I had for a long, long time. And I was proactive while I was at university and volunteered for all of the activities that were kind of related to media. I became the editor of the university newspaper and so on and so forth. The first break, so was the big break. And as I was graduating, there was a commercial radio station opening in Nottingham, and they were recruiting the entire staff and took on three T-boys, two T-boys and a T-girl, as it happens. And I got one of those jobs. It was called broadcast assistant, but essentially that's, you were there just to learn the whole trade. And I had a late night rock show was the first thing that I did, but I always wanted to be on the sports side. I always wanted to be in football commentary. And so anything that, any opportunity to volunteer, to cover games, I took. And that's how I got in. But it's not the route into the business today. The route into the business today is to have the same ambition and the same sense of vocation, the same passion, the same love for broadcasting. But it is to further your education and come through one of these excellent university courses.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. So I want to come on to, finally, you briefly mentioned at the start of the interview about how the game could change. I guess my last question for you would be, how do you see football returning and coming out of the current global situation? How do you see us moving forward?
I don't honestly know. I, to the point where I'm not sort of taxing my little brain about it too much, really. I mean, I sense that every business is going to come out of this differently. There have been one or two analogies made with wartime, which I don't like. I don't like war analogies in football, in football commentary. I certainly don't like war analogies here, you know, the fight, the battle against coronavirus. I kind of get it. I mean, it's loose language, but strangely for a football commentator, try to use the language properly. But one war analogy, which I don't think is at all relevant, is the sense that there's a lot of, you know, when this is over, we're going to have a heck of a party once this is over. It's not going to end like that. There's no VE day coming in this. This is going to be gradual, a gradual release from the lockdown that we're in. There are going to be an awful lot of unknowns ahead. And even, you know, when hopefully the vaccines are being administered and we have a better way of dealing and combating this, I still think everything's going to be different. And so I understand why, firstly, administrators in football have to try to come up with plan A, B and C. It's very important that there is a roadmap, seems to be the kind of buzzword at the moment, both for politicians and for administrators of various kinds, to try to see a way forward. And I understand that the kind of self-interest that I talked about at the start of the interview, because, you know, these are businesses, it is a profession. And the managing director of a Premier League football club has got to look after the interests of all the employees as well as the fans of that club. But the very fact that the initial conversations which are happening right now are highlighting a lot of the old elements of the football model. I mean, the power of television, for one thing, in terms of the financer of the modern game as we know it, and television companies playing a big part in these discussions that are going on at the moment. I mean, that in itself is a little bit Orwellian. It's a little bit odd that, the first objections to the notion that we should scrap relegation for this season is coming from, apparently, from Sky Sports and BT Sport, as saying, no, we paid our money for competitive football. That's what you've got to give us. So, you know, the model is there. the players are still on the salaries they are. I don't think that's not going to change overnight. It might change in time. You know, the game may have to find a new economy. Certainly, the further down the ladder you go, you know, clubs are going to be threatened. The very existence is going to be threatened. I'm from Bury. You know, we never thought we would see these clubs fall out of the league. You know, they were kind of always felt that they were scare stories and that eventually some knight in shining armour would emerge, some multi-million billionaire to rescue the football. Well, it's not happened to Bury. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's coming the way of some other football clubs too. So I would like to think that, say, this new perspective that this has given everybody will bring about new thinking. But I don't see new politics out there. I don't even see new news coverage out there. I just feel that so many of the old models are being applied to something which is completely different from anything that we've come across before. And, you know, if I've got a soapbox for 2 minutes to speak to the world at the moment, I'm not quite sure what I'd say, but it would be something to the effect of, come on, everybody, you know, this has changed everything. We've got to start thinking differently. We've got to start looking after each other a bit better. And what's important is the football. That it's the game, the world's game, the game that's played in just about every nation in the world, the game that is the national sport of so many of those nations. That's what we love. You know, the whole idea that we watch because it's the Premier League, because it's the Champions. No, we watch it because it's football. You can call it what you like. You can have whatever sponsor you want. Our excitement is seeing the best footballers in the world, the greatest meritocracy in the world. Everybody wants to be a footballer. Only the very, very best. You can't buy your way into a football team. You can't. Saudi Arabians can't. They can buy Newcastle United, but they can't. You know, whoever he is, he can't put his son in the team. You can't do that. Football is just about the most talented people in that particular profession entertaining the rest of us. And I would hope that somewhere in the midst of all this, we would pull away all of the kind of packaging around football and see it for what it is. But am I optimistic that that's going to happen? Not right now. No, I'm not.
Well, I think I can speak for everyone when I say people do want football back, but it has to be in the right way and it has to be safe. Clive, just want to say thank you very much for taking your time out to talk to us. We really appreciate you.
Is this the first one?
This will be the first one. So we're going to be released out on Saturday. So, we really...
You need a bookcase. You need a bookcase behind you. Everybody's got a bookcase. You've got to have a bookcase behind you. You can't just have a white wall. Okay.
I have to speak to the partner, see if I can get a bookcase first. So I'll have to put that request in. Thanks, right. Clive. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. And hopefully we'll all be hearing your voice again very, very soon. Clive, take care.
Good luck.
Fantastic interview there with Clive Tyldesley. We thank Clive again for his time to coming on to talk to us on our debut episode. Chris, I want to pick up on something that Clive said about the love of the game and football all over the world, what it means to everybody. I think Clive made a great point about it's not just the Premier League. It's not just it doesn't matter what sponsor you put on it. Everybody loves football. It's the passion, the atmosphere. I mean, for me, I remember my first game was Leighton Orient. Was it Leighton Orient? And my love of football has never changed since. No matter where I've gone to watch football, no matter who I've seen, whether I've watched it in front of 60,000 with 60,000 people, or I've watched it with 10 people on a Sunday, it has that same passion, and I have that same drive to just want to see good football. I mean, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Like, I mean, me and you, we've been to games together. I've been to like the Bowling, London Stadium, MK Dons, Leighton Orient, and it's South End as well. And it's just the same everywhere you go. Even if you look at the lower league, like when we went to Billericay, when they were going through their FA Cup run, it's the passion as well. And I love especially the FA Cup because it gives lower league teams that opportunity to come through. And it is literally luck of the draw who you get and where you end up playing.
That's a magic. That's another reason why we love football, the magic of the cup competitions. You can have teams from the lower leagues that go on a cup run and amazing comebacks and everything like that. And I think the best thing is to see the greatest footballers in the world, to see the skill, to see the goals, to see the, and I think that is that it's just amazing some of the things that people do, and that leads us on to our next segment, our top fives for the first time this week, guys. We're going to go through our top five-a-side teams. So we've got two types of five-a-side teams. We're going to go with our five-a-side team of all time in the Premier League, and we're going to go for a five-a-side team from this season. So, Chris, I think if we start off with our five-a-side teams of this season, and then we can go on to the all times, and we can just debate them as and when. So, Chris, you want to go first? Tell us your five-a-side team from this season.
So, from this season, I've got Henderson in goal, Sheffield United on loan from Man United, obviously. I think Sheffield United have been the biggest shock of the season. Keeping so many, conceding so little is what they're good at. And he is a real leader in the back line. I think a lot of keepers do go unnoticed for how much they bring to a team. Being a keeper myself, I know that it's a lot of organisation that you've got to do. You've got to make sure you know where the back line is and telling them where to mark and things like that. So yeah, I've got Henderson in goal. Then I don't think it needs an explanation who I've got in defence. I've got Van Dijk on his own. Solid, reads the game really well, and just a out-and-out centre-back. Then in the middle, I've got Ndidi and Kevin De Bruyne. So I've got the holding Ndidi, who can let Kevin just run around and be the creative one. I think Ndidi's an underrated engine for Leicester.
Totally agree with you. I think Ndidi is absolutely underrated at Leicester. I think whenever the transfer window comes back, whatever the transfer window it is, you could see a big club go for Wilfred Ndidi, because I think he's an absolute powerhouse. And when he strikes a ball, and he hasn't scored many goals, but when he has scored some goals, he can half hit a ball. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, I think with Leicester as well, because Ndidi was injured for a part of this season, but they have so many good centre midfielders. Like, you've got Telisman, you've got Madison, obviously. And I don't know where they find, because they've had Kante as well. Their centre midfield is like the hub of their team. So yeah, for me, it's Ndidi and Kevin De Bruyne. I don't think anyone needs an explanation for why I picked Kevin De Bruyne. He's probably, in my eyes, the most creative attacking midfielder. And up top, I've actually gone for Salah on his own, just because I think that him and De Bruyne would be able to work magically together. I think them two together in the same team, I'd love to see it one day, but I think they'd work really well. So, how about your team, Tom?
Okay, so we kind of got along the similar lines. We've got a different formation. So, I've gone with two centre-backs, a midfielder, a striker, obviously, with a goalkeeper. Goalkeeper for me is the same. I've gone with Dean Henderson at Sheffield United. Like you said, Sheffield United have been a stat as one of the surprise packages of this season. I think Dean Henderson is built to be David De Gea's replacement at Man United whenever he does move on. Dean Henderson is a fantastic goalkeeper, has kept a lot of clean sheets this season, and has saved a lot of points for Sheffield United. So, like I said, I've gone with two at the back. I'm in agreement with you again. Virgil van Dijk, there are no words for how dominant Virgil van Dijk is. He's just a monster. He's unbelievable at the back. He can dribble out from the back. He can spray a pass. I remember in particular watching Liverpool in the Champions League against Bayern Munich. And the pass from Virgil van Dijk for a goal from Mane was absolutely sensational. So I've gone with Virgil van Dijk. Along Virgil van Dijk, I've actually gone with Aymeric Laporte from Manchester City. Now, I know, obviously, he's had his injury issues this season, but before he got injured, I felt without Laporte getting injured, the title race would be a lot closer than it has been. I think City would have kept up with Liverpool, because Laporte's fantastic. Laporte's very technical on the ball. He's very strong in the air. He can bring the ball out as well as Van Dijk, and I yeah, it was a shame that he got injured and he missed a big part of the season. But for me, from what we've seen so far, it would definitely be in centre back for me.
I think with City as well, that's a position that they've actually struggled with since Company's retired and left. I think that's one position that they've struggled with. They went and spent big money on John Stones.
They haven't replaced him. They haven't replaced Company, have they?
No, that's the problem. They tried doing it with John Stones and he hasn't lived up to the expectation. Don't get me wrong, I think John Stones had a lot of potential. But I think it was too early for him to go to a big club like City.
I think you'll see him move on. I think you'll see John Stones move on from City. Potentially back to Everton. I don't know. There's no rumours in that. That's just something where I could see him going. Moving on to my midfield, there's only one man you could put in a midfield for me from this season, and that would be Kevin De Bruyne. His range of passing is phenomenal. You know, like, when he was at Chelsea, you know, he went away, and I think he was to Germany, and he learned a lot more, and it is one of Mourinho's greatest ever mistakes, letting him go, because you can see the class he outplays right now when he's on the pitch. He is absolutely fantastic. I've gone with one up front. I've gone with a Liverpool forward, but I've not gone with the same one as you. I've gone with actually Sadio Mane. Now, the reason I've gone with Sadio Mane is I think Salah had a great season, but I don't think it was his season. I think the outstanding player up top for Liverpool this season has been Mane. He's come up with great goals. He's come up with match-winning goals. His speed is second to none. He is an absolute powerhouse as well. I think he's an all-rounded player for a forward as well. And I think he's just been fantastic, phenomenal this season. So, yeah, I'll run through my five again. So that was Dean Henderson, Virgil van Dijk in back with Eric Laporte, Kevin De Bruyne on his own in midfield, and Sadio Mane up top.
No Harry Kane?
Not this season, no. Being a massive Harry Kane fan, as being a Tottenham fan, it's getting to a point now where it's been 4 or 5 years of consistency from Harry Kane. He's been absolutely fantastic, and I've been had the pleasure to watch whenever I've been able to get to see him on the TV or go to a game. It's been a pleasure to watch him play. I don't think he'll move on this summer or whenever the transfer window is. I think he'll move on after the end of next season, whenever that does run through. But for me, this season, he's just not been at his best. And that's unfortunate, because he is a fantastic player.
Do you think the situation with Poch and Mourinho coming in has affected him with that?
I think he's affected everybody.
Yeah.
I think he's affected everybody. Yeah. Poch was a great manager. Poch was absolutely fantastic for us. He built what Tottenham are now.
Mm.
And with Daniel Levy, built what Tottenham are as a club now. It was just a poor start to the season, whether it was something internally or something else. Something wasn't right and something needed to be changed. I'm still on the fence about Mourinho. I think he needs another transfer window or two to maybe see where he goes. So I've not got a lot of comment on that. I think the change has affected all the team. The team as a whole and the club as a whole.
Fair enough. So now we'll move on to our all-time Premier League five-a-side team. So, Tom, you go first this time.
All right, okay. So, for my all-time Premier League team, I have gone with a goalkeeper that I think was tremendous over two clubs in his Premier League career. And he particularly stands out for me because of coming back from such a horrific injury. And that would be Peter Cech for Chelsea and Arsenal. He was a phenomenal goalkeeper. And to do what he did when he got injured against Reading, to come back from that and play on for such a long period of time with the head guard on as well, and be so have such an impact at both Chelsea when he was there, winning titles with them, and having an impact when he went on to Arsenal. So for me, Peter Cech will be my goalkeeper. Centre-backs have gone with two again. Obviously, we've gone with Virgil van Dijk. I explained it previously. He is a powerhouse. He is a phenomenon. So he has to be in there for me. The centre back alongside him for all time for me has actually gone to Rio Ferdinand. I think Rio Ferdinand's class and his ability on the ball as well, which is what made him so successful at Man United under Sir Alex Ferguson. He formed an amazing partnership with Nemanja Vidic. It was actually quite close between him and Vidic, who was going to go in my all-time Premier League 11. But Rio just edged it purely because I think he scored. His goal scoring that he could add to his game was quite good as well. So along with Virgil van Dijk and Rio Ferdinand the back. In midfield, I have gone with the mercurial Patrick Vieira for Arsenal. Vieira reminds me. So you'll be surprised that I've gone with an Arsenal player. But for me, Vieira, I've only seen highlights of Vieira from things and stuff like that. I saw him at Juventus as well and stuff like that. And obviously now he's gone into management. Vieira reminds me a lot of how Yaya Toure played.
Yeah.
So that is kind of what I would feel like Yaya Toure based his game on, Patrick Vieira. Obviously, he was fantastic. He could drive for anybody. It was a hard task to get the ball off Patrick Vieira. So that for me is why he's gone straight into my midfield. And as hard as this was a choice to make up top for me, I do have, as a Tottenham fan, but I do have to go with Thierry Henry. Ooh. I think Thierry Henry has been the best Premier League player since his inception. He came in relatively unknown as a young player. Came in when Arsene Wenger went to Arsenal, and he just took it by storm. All right, he's not the Premier League's top goal scorer. That honour goes to Alan Shearer, but Henry scored some of the best goals I think I've ever seen in the Premier League, and it was. Again, as a Tottenham fan, it's hard to say a lot of this, but it was a pleasure to see him play. It was a pleasure to see some of the goals he scored. I remember a goal he scored against us. He went through from the halfway line, took it through everybody, and just slotted it in the corner. So for me, that was my all-time 11. So I went with Peter Cech in goal, Virgil van Dijk, and Rio Ferdinand in the back. Patrick Vieira in midfield and Thierry Henry up front. Chris, what have you got for?
Yeah, just picking up on a point that you made about Henry, I think he's got such a versatile way that he plays, because he used to be a winger when he was younger and then he started playing up front. And I think where he was a winger, he could play such nice football. He wasn't just an out-and-out striker. So I can see why you have gone for him. But for my all-time five-a-side team, I've got Peter Schmeichel in goal. He's definitely one of. It was either going to be Cech or Schmeichel.
What made you choose Schmeichel or Cech?
He scored more goals.
That's a good point.
He's got a better clean sheet ratio. He's played less games, but got sort of. He's near there with the clean sheets, and he does score. He's good with his feet. I just think that I've always rated Peter Schmeichel as a keeper. And as you can, if you watch Kasper Schmeichel play, you can tell that he's trained Kasper Schmeichel because of certain elements that he does when he comes out off his line. But I don't think anyone will be as good as Peter Schmeichel was. And then I've gone for a similar formation, one at the back, two in midfield and one up front. So in the back line, I've got the famous Bobby Moore. Natural leader.
As a West Ham fan, you're going for Bobby Moore. That surprised me.
World Cup winner, led England to the World Cup. And if he was in the game now, I think him and Van Dijk would be very close in terms of the best centre back, because Bobby Moore was one of the first centre backs that could read the game. And I think that's what he brought different to the game. Everyone talks about sort of players being good, but I think it's more about the players that bring something different to the game. And that's what he'd done. He could read the game as a centre-back. He wasn't just a hard-nosed, two-footing centre-back, which is what it was back in the day when he was playing. Bobby Moore in centre-back. My midfield is made up of Paul Scholes and Kevin De Bruyne. Doesn't need much explaining. If you could see two gingers like that in centre mid, unbelievable.
Is that why you picked them?
It'd be unbelievable having them two play together in their peak. And then for me, up top, I've actually gone for Shearer, just a formidable striker, all-time Premier League top goal scorer. He can bring it down, he can hold it up. And with him playing with Kevin De Bruyne, his goals, I think they would link very well. That's my starting five.
Just didn't want to pick up on an interesting point about your team. Paul Scholes.
Yeah.
How do you think he would have complimented Kevin De Bruyne? Because to me, and I'm not trying to pick apart your team, I feel like they're kind of maybe too similar to play alongside midfield.
I think Scholesy would be more of a holding back, and Kevin De Bruyne plays in the gaps, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He'll be the creative one, and Scholes will be the one that could do a long ball to Shearer, who brings it down to, who gives it to Kevin De Bruyne, and then by then Scholes has actually caught up with the game and he gets it again and he crosses it in or something like that. I don't think they're... Kevin De Bruyne is the one that goes through the middle and picks the little passes out, whereas Scholesy can ping a ball 50 yards and it land directly on your best foot.
I do agree with you. I think one thing we can agree on is that Paul Scholes had an absolute rocket of a shot. Yeah. As our next guest today, Paul Konchesky was kind enough to join us on the show.
Konchesky has space here. Paul Konchesky tried one. What a goal! What a screamer from Paul Konchesky back at Upton Park against his former club. A goal from nothing, but right from the top draw. Midway through the first half, Fulham's first real sight of goal, and it was only a glimpse. Konchesky carried it from halfway.
Now Konchesky leading his support down the left. Oh, it's in! Paul Konchesky has conjured up an incredible goal. Did he mean it? Was it a cross? Was it a shot? He doesn't care right now.
Paul, thanks for taking the time out to join us on the Game of Two Halves first episode. So we're pleased to have you on as a guest on our first episode. Chris, I think you want to start off.
Thanks for having us.
I think you want to start off asking Paul first question.
Yeah. So as Tom said, thanks for joining us. We're going to be doing a podcast every week for as long as we can. It's just a hobby of ours. I'm a big fan of yours, Paul. Big West Ham fan myself. But first of all, how have you found the isolation and the lockdown since coronavirus?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure. It's probably a tough one for me because I enjoy going out on a routine, but I've had a lot of time, obviously like everybody else, I've had a lot of time to spend with my kids, especially my little boy. I've had a lot of time to do stuff with them that I haven't done before, so... In a way, it's been quite nice, but am I getting a bit bored now? Yeah, I need something to start happening again.
I think we can all agree. I think we're all getting a bit bored now. So hopefully, we can all start going out again soon. Paul, I'm going to ask you a question that probably you get asked all the time: was it a shot or was it a cross?
No, it was a cross. It was a cross, but like I say, a lot of people, I don't score many goals, so I have to take them as they come, you know, and especially in a cup final, scoring one in a cup final will be with me forever, which some people, the best of players, don't score in a cup final, so I've been lucky enough to go and score one and for my club.
Fantastic. Chris?
Yeah, so in terms of the games that you've actually been a part of, obviously you've been a part of the FA Cup final, but you've also played in the Championship, Premier League, European Cups. What's the sort of moment of your career that highlights everything else, oversees everything else for you?
Probably playing for my country, for England. I was lucky enough to play twice. I think as you grow up as a young boy, all kids now want to be footballers, you know. But I was lucky enough to go and do that. So the next best thing would be go and play for your country. And I was lucky enough, if you want to say lucky, I was lucky enough to say I played every level and I got my couple of senior caps, which no one can take them away, and they mean the world to me.
Fantastic. Well, obviously, as Chris said, you played for a host of top clubs. What we want to know is, out of everybody you've played for, whether it be in national side or club sides, who would you say is the best player you've played with, or the outstanding talent that you've played with in your career?
I did play for him for long, so I was away with England, so you don't get that long. But I'd say Paul Scholes was on a different level, you know. Just technically, and the vision and the stuff he could do on and off the pitch was unreal. But if I had to pick a day-to-day one, it'd probably be someone like Steven Gerrard that I was lucky enough to go and play for a year with, and to train with him, the demands that he has on people, and what he brings to the football club, but what he wants and expects from other people to bring to the football club is up there with the best. And the day-to-day, every day, I'd put Steven Gerrard up there.
Yeah, fantastic. I think Steven Gerrard was a class above the rest. He was one of a kind. Chris, I think you've got another question for Paul.
How was Steven Gerrard in training? I've always wondered this, because on the pitch you see that passion coming out of him, but on the actual training field, what was he like as a person on the train? Like, was he always stuck in?
Yeah, he sets the standards, you know. If you're not training right, he'd be the one to tell you. He don't captain England, he don't captain Liverpool for no reason, and he don't start at one club for all his career and be the best. So he sets a standard on and off the pitch, and standards. And if you don't, he'd be the one telling you.
Brilliant. Well, I think I thought about this today, and I thought I'll just try and get a kind of behind the scenes story. Was there ever a move that was maybe on the cards that never happened for you, that you maybe kind of wish would have happened, or glad that didn't happen in the end?
When I was younger, when I was at Charlton, I played 2 or 3 years there, and at the time Sunderland was in the Premier League and they wanted to do a double deal with me and Scott Parker. So at the time you think that's a big club, you know. I think Noel Quinn, Kevin Phillips and people like that are there. So then Michael Gray, they're massive. Peter Reid was the manager. So that come out of the blue, and you know, you think it could be my first move as a young one trying to get up the ladder and go and do things that you want to do. I think they offered the money for me and Scott Parker. We obviously got turned down, and it's hard as a player, but it twists your head a little bit. But you have to forget about it and go again, and hopefully something else will come up. So do I wish it happened? Probably just to go and test what it's like really up north, and probably at a big club at a young age. But I loved my time at Charlton, and I went on from there anyway. So it was probably a bit of both, really.
Brilliant. So in regards to, because as you said earlier, you didn't score many goals, but I remember whenever you moved to Fulham, and then that got that left foot. Where did that come from?
That is like, some left foot, we have to say. That is some left foot.
Listen, I probably should have scored more goals and probably should have shot a lot more. But like you say, when I did score, that was bangers. But yeah. I'm not sure, you know. I remember it like yesterday, and so I got the ball on the halfway line, but there was so much space, so I just drove into it. And I think, I don't know, right back at the time, he came out really late. I was about 30, 35 yards out, and I thought I might as well have a go it. And when I hit it, I knew I caught it sweet. So if it was a target, I knew it would go in. And it, yeah. and it curled away from Rob Green as well, so it was even harder for him to try and get there. So yeah. it went right in the top corner. So I knew I caught the sweet, so it was only going one place, really.
Yeah, well, like we said, that is some sweet left foot. Paul, towards the end of your career, you moved to, as you one of Chris's local clubs, Billericay. What was the challenge? What was the challenge from transitioning to non-league football after a career within the league and at Premier League level?
On a personal note, I'd done it because I wanted to keep playing. You know, there comes a point you have to stop sooner or later. I didn't think I was ready to stop football completely because, you know, you still got your life ahead. I was lucky enough to go from young and I stopped at 36, 37, but I've still got my life ahead. So I didn't want to give up football too early. So that was why I wanted to keep playing. It ended up going there because the man was a mad West Ham fan and, you know, when you speak to people, he wanted to do things and I wanted to try and be part of that. But on the other hand, it plays with your head. It's completely different to like what you're used to. The standard of players, and that's no disrespect to them. The standard of the changing rooms, the standard of the pitches, just everything in general, really, from the way down you go in your car. It was just everything was an eye-opener. But there's been some fantastic players come out in non-league. You've got one at Leicester, Jamie Vardy, I played with him. And there's going to be many more come out because, especially with now what's going on, you know, with the money and all that, you're going to go and pick someone up cheap and you might take a risk on one.
Definitely. And as you mentioned there, with everything that's going on, it is going to have a big impact on clubs' money and financials. Do you think that will actually have an uplifting sort of like grassroots football and people getting scouted?
I think they're going to have to, you know. I know you get the big clubs and they're still going to have their money or what, but you know, you look at League 2 or League 1 club, they might have to start looking lower and lower. And I don't know, you only have to catch an eye once and you might get that one chance, that opportunity you need. And as a kid playing at 17, 18 grassroots on Saturday afternoon, there's people watching, you know, and if you catch that eye, you might get that one chance that you deserve and you never know what's out there.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Paul, we're going to go on to something a little bit different. We're going to go on to a little feature we like to call Who's Who. So we're going to ask just a few quick five questions about former teammates.
Yeah.
So, off of all you who played with, who was the best joker?
Jimmy Bullard.
Right. Who had the best taste in music?
Wes Morgan at Leicester.
All right. Chris?
So, who was the longest in the shower?
Probably Jimmy Bullard as well, because he had that. At the time, he had blonde locks, so now he hasn't got grey locks, but he had them blonde locks, and he was always in the shower and singing and dancing. And he was just a crazy guy.
Fantastic. So, who was the best and who was the worst dressed? You can say yourself if you really want to.
Nah, best dressed, probably... Jamie Vardy was probably one of the worst. He just loved the tracksuit, or because obviously easy to jump in your car and you can go. Best dressed, probably someone like Teddy Sheringham. Obviously a bit older at West Ham and always looked smart and dressed smart and just... That kind of guy, really, just a chilled man and always looked smart.
Who was the fastest player
I played with?
Yeah, that you played with.
Jamie Vardy.
Okay.
If he could catch a leopard, I think he could.
Fantastic. And the last one we'll come on to. Who is the best you played against?
Cristiano Ronaldo, by far. He was quite young when he first came. So, but he had that... Yeah, Naka still going left, he could go right, he was good in the air and he's just gone on and what he set out at Man United, he's just gone on and bettered himself and he's for me, he's the best.
Fantastic, fantastic. On the, well, I'll ask that age-old question ever since these two players have been around. For you, is it Ronaldo or is it Messi?
For me, it's Ronaldo. I think he's come to England, he's gone to Spain, he's gone to Italy, and he's conquered them. He's conquered them all. Messi, he's probably up there. He's probably the best technical one, but I think he's a lot gifted. I think Ronaldo's had to work for everything he's got. He still works for everything he's got, and I think, like I say, he's done it in three different countries he's been to, and he's been the best in all three.
Definitely. Definitely. It's the same for me as well. I think Ronaldo as well, he's more of an all-rounded player, whereas, as you said, Messi has that technical ability. But if you swing a ball in the air, I wouldn't put my money on Messi winning it over the centre-back, whereas with Ronaldo...
15 years ago, would you have had Messi or Ronaldo at Stoke away on a Tuesday night? What player would you...
Exactly, that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd take Ronaldo, wouldn't you? So,
oh, yeah, all day long.
For me, he's the best. And not just because I played against him, but just like I say, I think he's done it everywhere he's gone, and he's had to work hard, and he's proved that he can do it.
Brilliant.
Paul, we'll come on to kind of the last sort of segment. We kind of just want to know what your thoughts are for football going forward. What would you... Obviously, this is a tough time for everybody. Obviously, everything's changed. There's leagues, the Bundesliga starting again on the 15th of May. Firstly, do you think that's the right call from Germany for them to kick back again?
Like you say, it's an odd one for me. You know, they're obviously, their government's obviously different to Anne. And if it's safe, I think it's okay. But is it safe? We don't know. But for me, in England, I think there has to be a cut-off point that we all know if it's not safe by middle of June, then the season and the league's void. So everyone, not just, well, players, the clubs, fans, everyone will know, we've got a month to know. If it's going to be safe, then it's going to go ahead. If not, we'll have to leave it and then start again next year for me.
And with that, would you award the Premier League to your former club, Liverpool, or would it just be it didn't happen?
That's a tough one because they deserve it. Let's get it right. They deserve to win the league. And but if you give that to Liverpool, then do you relegate? Or don't you? And you bring people up and next year there's five go down.
Yeah.
That's I think that's why... The board and the government, they get paid a lot of money, so they're going to have to make a big decision that's maybe not going to be people. I love football. I want to see it back. I take my little boys to, I'm missing taking them on a Sunday and a Wednesday night. Like, I love it. And probably like you guys, even for the telly, you just got nothing to watch. And I'm missing it so bad that I think, as long as it's safe, I love it to go. I love it, the season to finish properly.
Definitely.
I think we're all in agreement now. I think the best course of action is to do it as long as it is safe. Paul, thank you very much for taking your time out to join us. We do really, really appreciate it. And we hope that we'll be able to get you on again soon. Hopefully, we'll all be back watching football very soon in the right way.
No, love to come back on, mate. Just drop us a text or, you know, get hold of me and whatever you want to do, mate. I'll come on and spend the night with you. It's fine.
Perfect. And when everything's back open, we'll be down the path for a pie.
No problem. We can do one in there as well if you want.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we'll do one in there. Yeah, it sounds like a great idea.
Be good. It'll be a good laugh. Be good crack.
Perfect. Well, take care of yourself, mate. We'll see you soon.
Cheers, guys. Take care, cheers, guys.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, so that was Paul Konchesky. Thanks for your time once again, Paul. So as he was talking about, he'd love football to come back, obviously. He loved taking his kids on a Sunday to their games. Obviously, grassroots football, as I said earlier, is not looking like it's going to come back till next year, at least. But we all want the game to come back. And I think, as both guests have said, it's got to be done in the right way. Everyone's got to forget about their wallet and how much money they're losing and things like that. It's got to be done safe. And that's the bottom line of it. But what are your thoughts on that, Tom?
Yeah, without going into it again and repeating ourselves too much, we have said that the main thing really is that it has to come back in the right way. No, there is no doubt about it. Football is a big part of our community, but at this moment in time, the main thing in our community is making sure that everyone is healthy and everyone is safe. And that's what we want here at A Game of Two Halves. We just want everyone to stay safe, abide by the rules, and we know we'll all be back at the same again. I think while we've been talking, Chris, you found something quite interesting as for our release today. What should have today been, Chris?
So I was just having a scroll through Instagram and I saw today should actually be the day that Liverpool lift the Premier League if they've won it.
So, there you go, Liverpool fans. That's one for you. Today should have been the day that you lived in the title in the first time in 30 years. So we thought we'd share that with you towards the end of the show today. Sorry, a little bit light. Look, listen, whether they get awarded it or not, in my mind, Liverpool deserve the title. And Liverpool are this season's Premier League winners, no matter what happens.
Yep.
So I think that's quite a good note to end the show on, Chris.
I think they deserve it, but as I said before, there's too many technicalities in terms of who goes into Champions League, Europa League, who gets relegated, who gets promoted. So I think personally they deserve it. Don't get me wrong, they 100% have played the best football this season that I've seen for quite a few years. I think it's sort of like Pep's second season since I've seen a team play that well. I feel like everyone at Liverpool is nice. I think Clive mentioned it in his interview as well. Everyone's really nice and they seem nice and everyone gets along. There's none of this sort of like kicking off. You see, like with Tottenham, whenever they lose, you see Dele Alli getting humped when he gets substituted. But with Liverpool, And don't get me wrong, I think everyone will always say that Liverpool were champions of this season. It might not be official, but everyone will say it, whether it's official or not. And that's it for me, really.
That's it. All right. Well, guys, that is the end of our first episode. Hope you've really enjoyed listening, tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube. Share the link out on Spotify, and we will see you again next time.